All right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I am one of your co-hosts, Ant Testor, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizard of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. And with me, late, as always,
snack time.
Per usual,
snack time.
Is the one and only flavorful Mr. Mike Cinnamon Linnem.
Okay, so Snack Attack, I thought it was on my time, whatever. We're in different time zones. It's a thing. Thanks, Great Britain. So, today, and for people that don't know me, I'm kind of the art beat writer at Gathering Magic, because saying I'm the art blogger makes no sense to people, as well as art critic makes no sense to people either. So it's kind of an odd thing, just like art columnist, I guess. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about the flavor gems of Shadows over Innistrad.
That is correct.
And Ant and I talked about this real quick to say there's always a thousand of them. We already have our pivotal moments, sure. But we figured, okay, we have these five phases of Orthos, which our boy Ant here wrote, which you really should rename that article, side note, but whatever.
Yeah, I know. It kills me a little bit every day. Every time I look it up and I have to Google the wrong thing, it drives me nuts.
No, like, you might need to rewrite eventually and change the name of it, which is fine.
I'll definitely do that. Well, I'll do an update for sure.
Why this is important is there are... Vorthos is a variety of things, and no, it is not a lore thing that I will be brought kicking and screaming to call it lore, because that's what World of Warcraft calls it. That is their jam. Stay in your own lane. We are flavor. That's what it's been determined to be. The lore is creeping in. So you can often tell someone how long they've been around, whether they say story, flavor, or lore, usually by timeline. We're in the flavor camp, and this, as part of this article Ant wrote, he said there were five faces of Orthos. Ant, what are they?
Right, so we got the artist, people who like the visuals of magic, the writer, people who like the written stuff of magic, a la flavor text. We have the oracle. These are people who really like things that kind of bring magic into their own world, so like guild t-shirts, cosplay, things like that. We have the dreamer, who is the fanatic of storyline, like our boy Carrie.
Yep.
And we have, what am I missing? And the gamer, obviously. So someone who just loves flavorful mechanics.
Correct. Top-down things, oozes it. So we're going to go through one of these for each of us. We picked them out from the set because often people will pick out the best artworks that they believe to be true. Is it always objective or storyline moments? But you don't really often see the things that cards that are made for the Vorthos.
Right. Yeah, and we want to be perfectly clear. This is absolutely not in any way, shape, or form a best of. This is not a top 10. Mike and I have talked about this at length.
Yep.
Top 10s are stupid for Vorthos because it's objectivity. It's objective things. Mike likes art for different reasons than I do. He likes brushstrokes. I like whatever concept and
you like high concept art. You really do.
Crazy
you,
stuff. Yeah.
You really do. You really like things that are you can pull away from the game.
I like things that get my imagination going. Like I like to look at a piece of art and walk away thinking about something totally different.
Word.
You know.
So today we're gonna go through them. There's no rhyme or reason. These are examples of it in the set. The set is larger, so I mean there's many more. But we just picked ones up so we could go through them. Things you could notice and look at it in a different way. So the first one we're gonna go through is the name and flavor text ones. Ant, what do you got for us?
Right. So my gem for this set is the card Always Watching.
Right.
And the reason why I picked this card is for the combination of name and flavor text as it applies to the art. So with the flavor text, we have it saying, "We pray to Avacyn on high, on snow white wings, fearless you fly. Keep safe our souls, keep safe our lives. May angels watch us from the skies." Children's prayer.
Right.
So right away, it is super rare anymore that we get poetry or any type of rhyming song type of a thing in flavor text. That is so rare.
Mm-hmm.
And I love seeing it here. We saw it in a core set from John Dale Beatty, who writes for Star City Games. He did a Good Geist's Vow, which was also a rhyme. And that was also conveniently Innistrad, right? So I loved kind of seeing that nice callback there. Always Watching is a great name that ties that flavor text to the art.
It's because, creepy.
Yeah, when you look at the art, you can see that these angels, we know that they've been corrupted. We know that they're, you know, they're always watching, but they're doing so in a malicious way.
Mm.
And the combination of that art, the name and the flavor text kind of reminded me of when you're a kid. And, you know, there's like, if you celebrate Christmas, you learn that Santa Claus is always watching, you know. And as a kid, when you're really little, you think, oh, that's cool. But as you get older, you think, oh, that's creepy.
Word.
And, you know, I loved how this kind of bridged that thought process for angels.
All right. I totally dig it. A great perspective on the piece, too. The artist you chose, Chase Stone, is also in the choice I chose for a wholly different reason. I chose, and I will always fight about this, Tamio or Tamio's Journal, Aunt, pronunciation?
I think it's Tamio.
Okay, Tamio it is then. as I can only literally speak German, that's all I got.
Yeah, the only reason that I say Tamio is because that's how I would pronounce it if I had to convert it to Korean.
Okay, well there you go.
But other than that, it's totally just my preference. I have no idea.
People are still going to fight over it on Reddit. Anyway, why I chose this, two reasons. One, it's the visceral throwback to the journal being a legendary thing. The same thing as we had previously with Venser's journal. I like that idea of a named thing that's highly relevant. I really enjoy that. The problem is with Venser's is it wasn't legendary, which they're like, wah-wah. But having the Planeswalker goggles and what have you makes me think very Diablo 2, and I really, really enjoy that if done well. And this one is. I mean, totally understands, okay, this is her clue journal. What do you get? A clue every turn. Cool. So that's fantastic. That really makes me happy. So the name makes sense, ties into the set and what it does. And the flavor text, it's just fabulous. Entry 434, there's more to Avacyn's Madness. And these are the ones where there's different entries.
Right, depending on the language.
Correct. So yeah. People have different ones. They can kind of piece together what is going on here. That is such a dynamic, fun way to get extra flavor into the game without a lot of extra work, because they have to be localized anyway through outside flavor text teams. So
yeah, and this is something that they've done before. They did it in the Return to Ravnica Oath of the Gatewatch with the heightened capitals or the letters that were offset to spell out a different message. And I really like to see that they're continuing to do that, because it just, you know, it's flavor text is one of those things where you kind of, most of the time you read it once and you're done. And I like being able to create these additional kind of games for us to play as people who love names and flavor text. You know, you can really dive in deep if you want to.
Yeah. I absolutely love that. I mean, that depth, just from a name and flavor text change, great. That, and if you actually, as I am always the art guy, this piece is one of the few marketing artworks that is zoomed in really far to show.
Oh, I did not know that. I never saw the
full image we'll put in the show notes. It's Jace holding the book, and he's in Markov Manor after it's been obliterated. And there's a couple vampires just sitting on the wall, like still stuck in the stone. And it's such a more comical scene when you see the full image that there's this guy upside down and it looks like he had the book in his hand and Jace is like, yoink, and like took it out.
Right.
So it's a funny scene, and I love scenes of those things where you
get to see it's this. Very M.C. Escher, too, how it's all kind of distorted and nothing's...
And this isn't even a nerd card, and you know, you get this extra flavor to it. I dig.
That's cool.
All right, and speaking of art... What do you got?
Right. All right. So our next section is art. So for, you know, obviously people like the visuals of magic. And for this section for flavor gems, we're just going to pick art that we really liked. Mm. For me, it was a combination of Lamholt Pacifist and Lamholt Butcher.
By our boy Ryan Pankost, who's so good. And he's got a baby on the way. Good for him.
Oh, my God. Does he really? Yeah, congratulations. If you're listening, congratulations.
Just got announced by he and his wife. They're having their second kid, so he's halfway to a relay. Good for him.
So what I absolutely love about this particular combination of pieces is how he's showing the transition between human and werewolf by using two different points of the day that are very easily distinguishable, being dawn and dusk.
Right.
Right? And the trees in the background and the little house or cabin in the background is also doing that because you can see the lighting shift. You can see that on one card, the lighting is very distinctly coming from the left and it's casting one part of the building in shadow, and it's the trees are casting shadow in one direction. And then on the other card, the lighting's coming from the exact opposite direction.
Right.
And I thought that was so brilliant, and I love little simple things like that that remind you, oh, this card has something else on the other side.
I dig that a lot. You did notice that she's still holding the bird, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But it's dead.
It's
totally dead.
They totally did that a lot. You know, her little brambles, you know, go on the creature's back and then still holding the bird. Those are the fun things that Reddit can find out day one. But the tree thing probably took quite a long while to notice. And that's just good. That's just a good painter that really understands lighting, because he probably went outside to look and watch and understand.
Right.
Love it. Love that piece. These are also both traditional, and both of the originals were on eBay, not sold together. And they both sold, went to different people. Kind of neat.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. I would have thought that he would have wanted them to stay together because they work so well as a pair.
Ryan doesn't always believe in that. He did this before with Loyal Cathar, and he split them up too. I mean, it's sometimes hard for people to drop large money on both.
Can you imagine having both of these original artworks and putting them in a custom frame where you could flop them around like a double-faced artwork?
I have seen that before. It is incredible. I've seen the ones where people hang them in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
Or like in a hallway.
Like a divider. Correct. If you have a big open concept, that would be sick.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I would love to do
that with that vampire that you showed on your Twitter that turns into the mist.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Super cool. Piece I chose, I did mention it in my article, but it's just so good. I chose Diergraf Colossus, which in German would be Diergraf, by Vincent Prose, who worked in the
Colossus. Well, finish it, Mike. I mean, now say Colossus, too.
I actually don't know the word for Colossus in German. I don't. It's probably Colossus or something ridiculous.
Russian.
Well, I mean, most of German's new words are Americanized, unfortunately, which makes me quite sad. But it's how the world works when you're in the digital sphere. Why I chose this piece and why I keep pounding at it is, one, technically it's very, very, very strong. I mean, the perspective is great, shows depth in the piece, and the farther you look into it, the more you're rewarded.
Right.
Which is such fantastic painting. And you know, this is all digital, though he started everything in pencils. He even worked in the hand. I mean,
I can't imagine doing something that detailed in pencil. I feel like it would just, it would turn into just a giant graphite blob.
Nah, he worked a little bit at a time, like just the hand or just the overall view. And the German word for Colossus is Der Koloss. I mean, it literally is Der Koloss von Rhodes would be like the Rhodes Colossus. I mean, straight up. But this piece, I mean, it has two references in here that's very, very strong. The first is Thomas Hobbes' The Body Politic, which is a political science term where it justified the use of a monarch, because the monarch was this picture of all of the people were like chainmail that he was wearing. And then this concept of the king needs to oversee the body politic. So kind of an interesting play on that visually. Also, the Grand Falloon, if you play or Legion, it's called the Legion in Castlevania games, Symphony of the Night. This is utterly a reference to that, with the hand and the creature, the zombies fall off of it. My God, was that.
I really liked how you could still see the shape, even though you could tell that it's made up of a bunch of, you know, zombies, obviously. Because I feel like, you know, that's kind of hard to pull off, right? You have to position everything in a way where you're still creating the silhouette that you want, but it's also super clear that it's a combination of smaller things. And the last time that I ever saw anything similar to this that I was really impressed by was this Cerebus by Todd Lockwood, where it's the three-headed dog, and it's made entirely from a combination of bones and body parts.
Right, right.
And yet you can still see that silhouette, that it's clearly Cerebus.
And they've thought that was really cool. Salvador Dali did this a few times with skulls. He'd put white women in like a black room, and they would position themselves and like get in the shape, and then it would look like a white skull from a distance. Very, very cool, very, very conceptual stuff of the 60s to reinvent what it means to be a symbol. But this is utterly beautiful. I mean, the Diagraph Colossus was also it's going to be in the Spectrum in the fall, which is the annual art book that is one of the high levels for people in this field of art to be included into. So utterly fantastic work. If someone wants to buy those original pencil sketches, I would. They're beautiful. We can get you in touch with them. Next up, we got cosplay.
Well, not so much cosplay. So this is I purposefully put cosplay in our show notes because I wanted to remind myself to make this clear. So the Oracle does not necessarily have to only like cosplay.
Well, even though
it's really anything that can justify a blending of real world and magic. So it could be something as simple as something from a magic card you'd like to see in real life that you could put on your desk. For example, open the armory, sure. Right? We got a guy who's dressed to the nines, ready to slay some monsters, right?
Right.
And he has slung over his shoulder a gigantic crossbow / ballista, right?
Bear trap.
That can launch bear traps.
Bear traps.
It shoots bear traps. And I so badly want to see a like Mythbusters or like I have something on the Discovery Channel where people are challenged to literally make a crossbow that shoots a bear trap and the bear trap like hits a pumpkin or something and actually closes around whatever it hits.
I'd want to.
I just think that this would be such a crazy thing to see in real life or in like a video game like a Skyrim or something like that. I would absolutely love to run around toting this thing as my main weapon.
Right. I mean, it's the thing made real. The easiest answer that people always say is, oh, it's cosplay. It's like, well, right. Yes, that is the simple explanation. The more difficult is like, I have a miniature weapon from the game that is also a keychain of mine that also opens beers. You know, like,
right, exactly.
Strange sort of, you know, Etsy is a large area of this, which also is largely cosplay.
But it's so rare. Like, I've been a fan of the fantasy genre since I was a kid, and I feel like it's so rare nowadays where I see something unique and truly different just in the genre. And for me to see a weapon that, like, I've never seen a weapon like that before, and it's amazing, and I want to see it propagate into other games. Like, I would love to see crossbow launching bear trap thing in more stuff. I just think it's an awesome idea. I mean, how many times in a fantasy game or a fantasy-themed game do you encounter a large creature?
Yeah.
All the time. All the time. So it totally makes sense that you would have something like this.
I mean,
if you wanted to maim and capture, not kill.
Just doing it live. I mean, it totally looks even anime. That is so oversized.
It's all, yeah, it does. It is very,
very much so. That's why I'm like, this is going to be cosplay. Yeah. It's so ridiculously huge. It has to be.
Yeah.
My choice, I took Insolet Neonate, simply because this image just makes me laugh. I mean, what do you even say here? For every effort in the gaming community when there's a half-naked woman on something, there really isn't the opposite side. And instead, Magic's art directors go up and say, you know what we need? We need a long-haired dude just slouching. Just putting the vibe out, you know? And I'm just like, oh my god, I don't know if this... I don't know who this is for. Like, is this for, you know, straight women? Like, gay men? I don't know. I love it. Like, no matter what it is. But the costuming is fantastic. Boots are ridiculous.
Those boots are awesome.
Coat is out of control. Even the little dagger he has is just cool. And everyone around him around the table has similar clothing, but his has flavor. He's just bare-chested, shaving it like a college student on the prowl. God, he's got a heel on his boot.
It reminds me of, honestly, if on Innistrad, a vampire or group of vampires started an 80s metal band or hair band, this is what they would dress like.
It's just oozing sexuality, which is
Innistrad Motley Crue.
Without showing it, that's the best part. Everyone else is like these elders that are bored or tired or whatever. Instead, this is this full of life, youthful person that you want to dress like and be like. And I think that is so good for anything in the Oracle. I love it so well.
Yeah.
Next up, we got from the Five Faces is the storyline people.
Right, the Dreamers. So this is anything that furthers the story or adds to the story in some way.
Sure.
So for mine, I picked Anguish Unmaking.
Shocker.
This is a moment, you know, obvious Soren is destroying Avacyn, his creation, right? But the reason that I picked it is because something that's kind of been on my mind lately and is kind of interesting to me is that a lot of our current planeswalkers, our post-mending planeswalkers, right, are walking in the footsteps of old storylines.
Okay.
So, for example, Soren here is our, basically, if it were the olden days, he would be our legendary vampire that we followed around through the story, right? Okay. Who was Krovax. And Krovax was made famous for killing the angel that he loved.
Slow down. Okay. So Weatherlight storyline, this took a long period of time. I mean, this wasn't just a random happenstance that he killed this character. Like, this was multiple blocks, multiple flavor texts, multiple artworks have these two characters interacting with each other.
Yeah.
Go on. Okay, who's the person?
So what's interesting to me is that we again have a very prominent vampire in our story who is killing an angel who he loved with a sword. It's a very similar parallel. And I wanted to point that out because I find it interesting on the same level where I find Chandra to be a very parallel character to Jaya, right? That's much more apparent and I think straightforward. This one was more subtle.
I mean, everything's been done, and of course Simpsons Did It is a full meme about it.
Right.
I went in a totally different direction. Instead of a storyline moment with the five pivotal moments that are in every set, I went with what's next. And now if you go through this set very quickly, you'll notice that, you know, there's crazy angels and there's bad creatures coming about again. Nahiri's super angry, blowing things up. But that's not the conflict. That conflict's already been done. What's next is, what is Nahiri doing? Why do we care about what is Jace trying to find? And the one I chose, the story mode, is Cult of the Waxing Moon. Simply because this idea that their faith is shattered, that the people of Innistrad are really worshiping anything that actually works. And right, not only the prior storyline that explained there was used to be a cult of a sea god. And you're like, sea god?
Right.
Age turns! Never mind!
Yeah, this flavor text is great too, where it says, in times of madness, people cling to the familiar, monstrous though it may be. And it reminds me of kind of a setup where if you imagine a world where people were Christian and for whatever reason their focal point of their religion turned on them and they decided to go back to more pagan roots of worshiping like Odin and Thor and things like that again, falling back onto their past. This has a very similar kind of vibe to it, and it's really interesting because it's giving us a window into how the humans of Innistrad used to act,
right,
before Avacyn existed and before that church was a thing.
And now we will be referring to probably the next set where we get to find out what is the moon all about, who is the sea god, what is that deity,
what are these people worshiping, what are they gathering for, right?
That is actually working.
It's building to something.
Also interesting to me is that five drops have had kind of a history in Magic to be flavorful cards. It's usually the top end of a curve. In Limited, the card Malira's Keepers from Mirrodin Besieged also has this explanation of flavor as well. So Malira was the human on New Phyrexia, also known as Mirrodin, that was immune to the corruption, immune to Phyrexian everything. And the Keepers has the flavor text that this is the last hope. If she dies, Mirrodin will totally fall. And you needed this as a final point to say, okay, maybe in this Mirrodin Besiege, maybe Malira will live, and then, you know, New Phyrexia would not happen. It would be Mirrodin pure. Well, we find out that, you know, Phyrexia wins easily, but that five drop set as that example from it. And I'm seeing the same thing here with Cult of the Waxing Moon to say, ah, this is what refers to the next. It's also an uncommon, too. So
interesting. And green.
And green. Small point, but you start to notice some of those cyclical things as they loop back around a little longer that the design team makes.
Right.
Next up, what do you
think? All right, our fifth face of Vorthos is the gamer. Right. So this is any type of cool, flavorful mechanic, interaction, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What I picked is Skeleton Key. For about a million reasons.
Yeah.
My first of which is the new mechanic keyword Skulk, meaning it can't be blocked by creatures with greater power, right?
Right.
I absolutely, absolutely, absolutely love Skulk. I am a huge, huge, huge fan, anyone who knows me, huge fan of assassins, rogues, sneaking through the shadows. When I'm playing D&D, I'm the rogue. That's every true. Single time. I've played probably 7 or 8 different varieties of rogue slash assassin. When I play Skyrim, Dark Brotherhood, all the way, second playthrough, gonna do the Thieves Guild.
That's your job.
So seeing Skulk, I think, is an absolutely wonderful mechanic that definitely ties into the flavor of sneaking through the shadows, because a lot of times those creatures, they don't have power. One of the things that I love about assassins and rogues is that they overcome their weakness of not being physically strong by attacking vulnerable points and waiting for the time to strike and using things like poison or getting you when you're sleeping, because everyone sleeps sometime, right? Yeah. And tying that into an equipment that gives Skulk to all creatures and making it Skeleton Key, like, this card just for me is like a home run. It's a complete knockout. But as far as gameplay, I love the idea of having a creature, giving it the Skeleton Key, which just means it can open any lock, and thus granting my creature Skulk, so the ability to slip by unnoticed. Like, I love it. It
helps any sort of commander deck too that wants to build full on flavor theme. Where yeah. You might have some inclusions that aren't very flavorful, frankly, but the key allows it, those cards still to be played, you know, just to make a playable deck oftentimes.
Right. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that as Magic grows and as it continues to exist and there are more and more and more cards, your ability to make a thoroughly flavorful deck that not only covers every single base of what you're trying to heighten, but also is good. Like, you can actually play it and not be embarrassed to pull it out at a commander table.
Right.
Like, it's something that's going to come with time. And this is one of those cards that's going to become a classic staple in any type of assassin, rogue, thief style type of a deck.
I dig. I went for the easier choice here, as you did it last time, so we flip-flopped. And I chose the Archangel Avacyn / Avacyn the Purifier because the mechanic here is so good. It's so good. Like, transforming. Yeah. It's such a funny thing. And I looked through a bunch of examples of this to see what is the best werewolf. But really, werewolf is a werewolf. This is utter character change. And
it's the set.
She does not change back. That is the key. Once she goes crazy,
correct,
she stays there.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's yeah, and a lot of people, it was funny that a lot of people got lost in the, she's better than Sarah Angel, or she's better than being, like just because of cost. But in reality, she's not. And the reason that she's not is super flavorful. And it's because, when you first play her, sure, she might be better than Sarah Angel, right? But there's going to come a time where she transforms and you have really nothing, potentially no control over it, right? And in that transformation, she might kill more of your stuff and she loses the ability to attack and block.
Right.
So it's not necessarily a better Sarah Angel because you can't rely on it the same way you can rely on a Sarah Angel. Right. Just like you can't rely on Avacyn to protect you.
Right.
It's just, it's beautiful. I absolutely love the transform mechanic.
I mean, the art is fantastic too. Everything of this tops down. They even gave us some flavor text in the back, which it would have been an utter crime if it didn't. People would have been fired up about it. But this is that flavorful mechanic at its peak. This is the best example of it in the set, and probably the best transformative thing we've seen done thus far. And there will be more. I mean, we already have planeswalkers that can transform. But even Garrix wasn't this pronounced. I can't get over how perfect it is. I mean, it tells the entire story in one fantastic card. Like, that's absurd.
Yeah, the only one that I think even comes close in this set is the vampire that turns back and forth from a mist.
Yeah.
That one has a beautiful narrative as it plays out. But yeah, this
but that
particular
doesn't affect
card
storyline.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Where that card hits four of the five, this one hits all five. It's perfect.
All right, so we've gotten through all five today, and honorable mention, you mentioned this, and I'm like, fine. I'm going to go first with this, and I got to mention the Pale Rider. It's just so good. That art is so...
It's my boy.
So good.
Yeah, it is really
good. I can't even handle it.
One of my absolute favorite things about that particular artwork is how very few amounts of colors he actually used. So, for example, the trees in the background, the white bark trees, are the same white that's used in the horse and in the face of the rider. And the dark colors of the trees, leaves and things like that, are repeated in the mane and repeated in the cloak. And it's just, it's such a, you can definitely tell that he understands the use of color, most likely from his days doing watercolor, because you really need to understand where your colors are going with watercolor, or it just turns into a muddy mess.
Right, and I wrote about this in an article to say, often digital artists have all the options in the world, every color, every brush you can use. So by that wonderful open-ended aspect, you are also don't realize how valuable color can be.
Yeah.
If you're a painter, I mean, you literally like, well, I can't use 15 pieces of paint here. That's expensive. And then I'm going to have all these open ones and they might go bad. So what do you got to do? You limit your palette. You limit the amount of colors. And you can see this, as you said, because of watercolors. You can't have 16 colors there because then you have to worry about so much more. Digital people limiting what they do and not zooming in 100% to get a perfect line edge is really, really hard. To keep yourself constrained, even though you can do anything. So
and it's crazy how he split the image at the like right at the middle. The horizon's right at the middle, and the darker grass has the lighter horse, and the lighter background has the darker person. And it's just like this really cool yin yang type of a vibe.
It's
cool.
It's a dude on a horse without a face. Composition is not good. It's just flat, boring. But in at card size, it stands out because it's so it's a T. Basically, it makes a T and then an H through the character, and that's it. It is dull as crap for moving your eye, but you cannot look away at it because it's so good. It's so interesting, and it's a breath of fresh air from everything we're seeing to say, oh, this is like the good olden days. And I'm like, no. This is just high painterly style that you haven't noticed yet. It's been there the whole time. It's just been in cards that haven't been very good, like this card, which is not really a high-level tournament playable, but it's beautiful. So, Seb, welcome to the world of being in Donato's thing, where you get great art on okay cards.
Right.
And so what do you got for us? You got any
Yeah, I got one. I'm gonna leave us on a groaner. It's just pretty funny. It's Apothecary Geist.
Of course.
So, I love this card because the art to me, like, just like bartender. It's just bartender's Geist. And I would have loved for the flavor text to have been something like, he's got the only spirit you'll need, or like something
so
like
that. Bad. It's so
bad. But it would have been so funny.
So bad.
I would have laughed. I would have laughed so, like, if I was working on this set and someone typed that in to the thing, I would have just died. I think I would have just laughed
it's my head so off. Bad. But
dude, he's such a bartender.
Yeah,
come on.
With the hair too, like, he looks old.
Yeah, he's like straight out of Cowboy Bebop, just chilling behind the bar, you know.
And not all bartenders look like that, but it's comical. And this is humor. Humor thrown into a card that, you know, isn't going to be highly playable forever, but it's fun. I get it.
Yeah.
So that's all we got for this week. Went through, we're happy. Hopefully you found a couple things. We've been finding quite a bit that we've been working on behind the scenes. We can't talk about everything yet, but we're lining up some artists to make some pretty cool swag.
We got a lot of guests coming
on. We really do.
We have a ton of stuff planned. I was emailing people nonstop today.
Yep. We have things on the Patreon front we'll be talking about very, very soon. But otherwise, if anyone ends up in GP Minneapolis in May, get a hold of me right away.
What are the dates exactly?
It's Memorial Day weekend.
When is it? It's Saturday to...
Well, it's going to be Thursday to Sunday, because we will be doing things the whole time. There will be cubing happening every day,
right.
In case you don't want to play in the main event. Also, there will be vintage artists constructed, and a variety of other things that will be happening, which we'll be announcing soon, very soon, right around the corner here. But right. Otherwise, thanks for watching today. You can find Ant over on the Twitters at Anthony Jerome Tessitore III.
And I also just finalized my new website. So that has all my stuff.
Yeah.
It's so much easier. Just go to anttessitore.com, and I have, you know, linked to my Twitter articles. Snack time, old episodes, it's literally everything in one spot. I've been meaning to do that forever. So
we need to get you up on the thing, so if we can just put like Ant MTG flavor, you show up. We'll work on that.
Yeah.
You can find me at Vorthos Mike on the Twitter normally, or my articles at Gathering Magic, which are so wonderful that they host us. But love to hear from feedback from people. We do have some openings up for some upcoming artists, so if you have suggestions for people, please let us know. We'd love to hear a sound off. So maybe some voices we haven't heard as of late. But other than that, thanks for watching, and we'll talk again soon.